Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Visions of the Past, a show that brings you news and discoveries from around the world and how it relates to paganism. Now here's your host, William Brigley.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Visions of the Past. I'm your host, William Brigley. As many of you know, that Visions of the Past airs on Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. It also airs on International Pagan Radio at 4 a.m., 12 p.m., and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is to help cater to many of our listeners around the world. For this episode, we will be exploring my Canadian home province of Nova Scotia. For many years, I've been involved with my own family's genealogy to find out our family's origin. But in working on this project, I learned about the natives that lived in the same area as my first Canadian ancestor in the New World at the time, which were the Mi'kmaq people. This is not surprising, as there are numerous archaeological sites throughout Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, Quebec, and Newfoundland and Labrador that support this. I know that today there are many earth-based belief systems that thrive in Nova Scotia, besides native beliefs, to include more modern ones. In 2011, I had a very special opportunity to attend one of the Wiccan Beltane celebrations before moving. As I watched the maypole dancing and people jumping over the flickering fire, I got to thinking of my own polytheistic beliefs and the diverse ones of more modern times. Did they have a whole pantheon of deities, as with many other ancient civilizations? Did they worship nature? What sort of mythology did they follow? Were there any similarities between their beliefs and ours, or of that of other ancient beliefs around the world? In the area I grew up, which is Queensland, Nova Scotia, there are many tales of the natives that once lived there. Teen, I explored many miles of the surrounding wooded areas. The idea of my hometown before modern times always fascinated me. This was probably one of my driving forces to do so much exploring. Queensland is many miles from the closest city. Besides the 103 Highway and the old Number 3 Highway, which is more like a road, Queensland is only connected to other parts of the province through a vast forest and a network of rivers called the Mersey. Today, much of this area has been clear-cut due to the logging industry, while some areas for hunting and fishing remain. When I was a kid, we used to fish in the rivers and lakes. But what about before that? Even having explored this region myself, I always wondered if I was overlooking some mystery. As I mentioned, the Mersey is filled with miles of wooded areas, numerous dirt roads, rivers, and wildlife. I remember back in high school spending some of my weekends with my cousins at a cabin about a mile and a half back there. Sometimes we'd spend the entire day just following trails. I always liked being close to nature, but I wanted to know more about those who I heard once lived there. As I got reading on the subject of archaeology, I learned that there are more than 800 archaeological sites in Nova Scotia relating to the Mi'kmaq, with hundreds more throughout the Maritimes. Along with these sites come legends that have been passed down from generation to generation among the native peoples and have been recorded and published. On numerous occasions, we traveled back in these woods and even came to what's known as the Mersey River. It is one of about 11 river systems found in the southwestern end of Nova Scotia. This particular one drains into Lake Rosignol and Kejimkujik Lake to the south and north and extends from Liverpool in Queens County to Annapolis Royal in Annapolis County. Along this river are at least 6 power stations, one of which was close to where I grew up. In all of my memory, I remember the rushing wild river narrowing as it flowed beneath the power station. However, in the summer of 2004, this all changed and discoveries were made that fascinated me when I learned of them. Nova Scotia Power lowered the water level of the Mersey River in southwest Nova Scotia to repair the power dams. What the archaeologists uncovered as a result was a wealth of artifacts that indicated numerous ancient camp and fishing sites. More than 100 sites were found along the river. Archaeologists also found and collected more than 10,000 artifacts, pieces of native pottery, a wide range of pecked and ground stone tools such as axes, celts, and gouges. Also found were a variety of spear points and stone chippings or flakes left behind from the making of tools. Many of these tools were dated between 500 and 6,000 years old. Who would have ever thought that an area of Nova Scotia would reveal such an ancient hidden history? During my teenage years, I attended summer camp for a few weeks at Kejimkujik National Park. There are more than 60 archaeological and historical sites which are found there. Kejimkujik is best known for the hundreds of petroglyphs that are carved into the stone along lake shores and other areas of the park, some of which I got to see when we went canoeing and exploring. There are more than 500 known in the area, which make it the largest number of petroglyphs in eastern North America. There are also representations of tall ships, canoes, human figures, and cultural symbols, which are the most common ones. Other carvings depict animals, lodges, crosses, and remarkably, hieroglyphics too. Many of the images portray men and women wearing traditional clothing. Over 60 of them depict the unique peaked cap worn by women, suggesting the importance of women in the Mi'kmaq society. In fact, the earliest evidence of people in the Kejimkujik area dates to about 3,000 to 4,000 years ago in the form of campsites. This time period is called the Middle Archaic period. It is with the new discoveries made along the Mersey River, south of Kejibukujik, that indicates an earlier archaic people who used to use these waterways as much as 6,000 years ago. There had also been limited research done along the Allens River, which revealed its usage as well. Kejibukujik, they lived a semi-nomadic lifestyle, moving from place to place as they followed the cycle of the seasons in search for food and resources. Over the millennia, they developed the distinctive culture, traditions, and language of today's Mi'kmaq. The reason I am including this in this episode is not just because it is my home province, but because with any belief system comes legends, myths, and tales to explain the world around us, as well their interaction with nature, especially in ancient times. This is a commonality found throughout the ancient world, and Nova Scotia is no different. One such legend tells of a battle where Glooskap fought with the god of winter, where Glooskap lost, making it winter year-round. Since the last ice age, studies of climate changes have confirmed conditions like year-round winter. So here we have an occupation of an area by an ancient people, which predates even the building of the Egyptian pyramids, and studies which seem to support the climate referred to in the legend. The story continues, whereas even after Glooskap took his people south to ask the goddess of summer to bring back the four seasons, there was still one giant chunk of ice left. Could geology support this possibility? Actually, it does. If you look at elevation maps for the Cobequid Mountains, you see that the mountain has been eroded on the north and south sides, yet there is no major water source on top of that mountain. Geological and glacial studies show that the Cobequid Mountains were eroded by a piece of ice that remained after the last ice age. A piece of ice 2 kilometers thick. Legend again representing fact. The area of Glooskap, Nova Scotia retains its name from this legend even to this day. When we come back, we're going to discuss some other features, facts, and myths that make up the native Mi'kmaq belief system. So here's a little Darn the Bard and his song, The Hills They Are Hollow. We'll be right back, everyone.
Of his world, and invite you to step inside. And the hills, they are hollow and home to the fae who dance on Midsummer's Eve. Some people don't understand when I say these are the things I believe. These are the things I believe. There is an old circle of stones that stands on the moor. Every moss-covered face tells the secrets of ancient lore. The tall standers guardian, witnesses to the rites, to nature's gods of darkness and of light. And the hills, they are hollow and home to the fae who dance on Midsummer's Eve. Some people don't understand when I say these are the things I believe. These are the things I believe.
Listening to Visions of the Past with William Brigley on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for listening. And now, back to William.
Welcome back, everyone. That was Darn the Bard and his song, The Hills They Are Hollow. Before we go much further, I want our listeners to know that much of what we know today about the traditional myths of the Mi'kmaq is due to an 1894 book written by Reverend Silas Tertius Rand, a Baptist missionary who was fluent in Mi'kmaq. He documented stories between the years of 1847 and 1870. Before this, research into the archaeological artifacts and oral stories that were passed down through Mi'kmaq generations tells the rest of the story. For those not familiar with the ancient history of Canada, the earliest known traces of human occupancy in Atlantic Canada dates back more than 10,000 years. Evidence of this is found in Debert, Nova Scotia. These people are referred to as the Paleo-Indians, who came into the Maritimes around the end of the last Great Ice Age, following large game animals such as the caribou as they expanded into the land revealed by the retreating glaciers. The reason the markings found at Kijimukujik would be so old is because of its abundance of caribou, moose, freshwater fish, and other staple foods in the area at the time. The Mi'kmaq used the systems of rivers and lakes as they traveled between the south and north coasts, with Kijimukujik being right in the center of their journey. Spent many days canoeing at Kijimukujik myself, I can say traveling by canoe through these river systems would have taken a long time. Doing this on a regular basis would give you some pretty strong arms. According to Parks Canada, the Mi'kmaq lived in harmony with nature, leaving very little imprint on the land. What we do know of these people comes from uncovered remains of seasonal camps, burial grounds, fish weirs, portages, and trails that are still present to this day. To back up a bit, a fish weir is a line of stones partially across a river to redirect the passage of fish and trap them. For example, a weir can be used to trap salmon and other fish when they attempt to swim upstream, or to trap eels as they migrate downstream. The earliest traces of fish weirs at Kijimukujik date back to 2000 BCE. By comparison, this is roughly the same time when Stonehenge was built. Like most belief systems, the earliest religious practices included shamanism. Earliest first-hand record of this practice in the Maritimes comes from the French priest Abbe Pierre Millard in about 1740, who interviewed Argumalt, a shaman from Prince Edward Island. In a very extensive letter, the priest was able to translate what Argumalt explained what life was like before the Europeans came to the Maritimes. One of the practices of North American shamanism is the ability to heal. This is done through the utilization of numerous techniques, including herbal remedies, ecstatic rites, prognosis through visions, in addition to controlling events such as the weather, and bending the future through their communication with the supernatural or spirit world. Where have we heard of these practices before? Reverend Rand, who also wrote the book Legends of the Mi'kmaqs and Other 19th Century Recorders of Mi'kmaq Folklore, states that the Mi'kmaq word for shaman is buwin, which Reverend Rand equates to wizard on page 59 of his book. Keep in mind that Reverend Rand was a missionary who spent 40 years among the Mi'kmaq Indians of Nova Scotia. The powers of Mi'kmaq shamans, claimed to derive from the spiritual and animal worlds, has been said to include the ability to fly through the air, go down through the earth, remain underwater for a chosen period of time, and to transform into an animal. Sounds to me to be a lot like the cave drawings and paintings found throughout other regions of the world dating back before this time. This is fitting with other Neolithic examples of shamanism found throughout the world, including altered states of consciousness. By 13,000 years ago, the continental glaciers from the last ice age had melted away from this area. Even with the ice gone, it was still a cold and rapidly changing environment compared with the climate today. Most of the land was covered in grasses, with small forests of spruce, birch, and alder growing in the more protected areas. The shoreline of the Bay of Fundy was near Cape Split, leaving the Minas Basin as dry grassland. Some experts believe that this time, large Ice Age mammals may have still roamed this land. These mammals included mastodons and mammoths, giant beavers, giant short-faced bears, and direwolves. Archaeologists believe that the large Ice Age animals lived in this region perhaps as late as 10,000 years ago. Adding to this, John Shaw of the Geological Survey of Canada suggests legend can describe geological fact. The tidal range in the Minas Basin increased suddenly as a result of a catastrophic break at a natural barrier across the Minas Channel about 5,000 years ago. Shaw believes one of the Glooskap legends was first told to explain this event. Glooskap asks his friend Beaver to build a dam so he can take a bath. When Beaver won't remove the dam, Glooskap asks Whale to flip his tail to take out the barrier. So here we have reference to both geological events and possible account of an extinct giant beaver explained through legend. This is similar to how the Greeks used a war between the Titans and the Olympians to explain a volcanic eruption. When we come back, we're going to look at who exactly Glooskap was and some of the other figures in the Mi'kmaq belief system. We'll be right back, everyone.
Rise up, Phoenix, rise from the fire. Rise up, Phoenix, soar forever. dragon wings have turned to red and gold. Now you have the power to heal, just as the legend is told. You can set out again, catch your dreams and desires. With a new wisdom, fortune be mixed by. With a new wisdom, fortune be mixed by.
Listening to Visions of the Past with William Brigley on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for listening. And now, back to William.
Welcome back. That was Jenna Green and her song, Phoenix. For those of you listening who are unaware, the music you hear at the Spiritual Unity Radio Network is donated by the artists themselves free of charge. So if you like what you hear, please take the time to support them by purchasing their music. For a complete lineup of the shows airing on the network and to learn more about our hosts, please visit spiritualunityradionetwork.org. We also have Reverend Terry's website at revterrypowerhp.com. And for our listeners, our shows air every week here at CERN are as follows. On Tuesdays, we have Reverend Terry's Power Hours. On Thursday, we have Under a Shady Tree. On Friday, we have Spiritual Wellness and Physical Health. On Sunday, we have Sacred Divergence Radio. And on Monday, you're back with me again for another episode of Visions of the Past. I mentioned earlier I was going to cover some of the figures within the Mi'kmaq belief system. So here is just a few. We have Jisog, which is one who made everything. Sometimes Jisog is referred to as Jiniskim, or the Great Spirit. Neither word implies gender because it's not important whether the Great Spirit is a he or a she. Next we have Naguset, which is the sun and travels in a circle and owes its existence to Creator. Naguset is the giver of life. It is also a giver of light and heat. The power of Naguset is held with much respect among the Mi'kmaq and other Aboriginal peoples. Usikamu is the earth, or the area of land upon which the Mi'kmaq people walk and share its abundant resources with the animals and plants. Usikamu refers to the Mi'kmaq world, which encompasses all the area where the Mi'kmaq people can travel or have traveled upon. Usikamu was created by the Creator and was placed in the center of the circular path of Naguset, the sun. Naguset was given the responsibility of watching over the Mi'kmaq world. Naguset shines bright light upon Usikamu as it passes around its path, and this brought the days and nights. And next we have the creation myth of Glooskap. World was created, and after the animals, birds, and plants were placed on the surface, Creator caused a bolt of lightning to hit the surface of Usikamu. This bolt of lightning caused the formation of an image of a human being. It was Glooskap, first shaped out of the basic element of the Mi'kmaq world, sand. Creator unleashed another bolt of lightning which gave life to Glooskap, but he could not yet move. He was stuck to the ground, watching the world go by, and Nagaset traveled across the sky every day. His head was facing the direction of the rising sun. His feet were in the direction of the setting sun. His right hand was pointed north, and his left hand was pointed in the south direction. Glooskap watched the animals, the birds, and the plants grow and pass around him. He asked Jisog to give him freedom to move about the Mi'kmaq world. So it was that a third blast of lightning came and that caused Glooskap to become free and to be able to stand on the surface of the earth. After Glooskap stood up on his feet, he turned around in a full circle 7 times. He then looked toward the sky and gave thanks to Creator for giving him life. He looked down and gave thanks to Usikamu for offering its sand for his creation. He looked within himself and gave thanks to Jisog for giving him his soul and spirit. Glooskap then gave thanks to the 4 directions, starting in the direction of sunrise, and following the sun east, south, west, and north. In all, he gave his heartfelt thanks to the 7 directions. Next, we have the old woman who introduces herself to Glooskap as Nugami, his grandmother. When Glooskap asked the old woman how she arrived in the Mi'kmaq world, Nugami said that she owed her existence to the rock, the dew, and Nagaset, the sun. She went on to explain that on one chilly morning, a rock became covered with dew because it was sitting in a low valley. By midday, when the sun was most powerful, the rock got warm and then hot. With the power of Nagaset, the rock was given a body of an old woman. This old woman was Nugami, who came into being already very wise and knowledgeable. She told Glooskap that he would gain spiritual strength by listening to and having great respect for his grandmother. Next we have Nita Wansum. One day when Glooskap and Nugami were walking along in the woods, they came across a young man who was tall and physically very strong and had gray-colored eyes. Glooskap asked the young man his name and how he arrived in the Mi'kmaq world. The young man told Glooskap his name was Nidawansum and that he was Glooskap's nephew. He told Glooskap that he was strong and that he could run after the moose and caribou to bring them down with his bare hands so they could all live comfortably. When Glooskap asked Nidawansum where he came from, Nidawansum said that while the east wind was blowing hard, it had caused the waters of the ocean to become rough and foamy. This foam got blown to the shore on the sandy beach and finally rested on the tall grass. This tall grass happened to be sweet grass and it held onto the foam until Nagaset was high in the midday sky. At that time, Nagaset gave need to want some spiritual and physical strength in a human body. Creator told Glooskap that if he relied on the strength and power of his nephew, he would gain strength and understanding of the world around him. Glooskap was so glad for his nephew's arrival to the Mi'kmaq world, he called upon the salmon of the rivers and seas to come to shore and give up their lives. The reason for this is that Glooskap, Nedawansum, and Nugami did not want to kill all the animals for their survival, so in celebration of his nephew's arrival, they all had a feast of fish. They all gave thanks for their existence, and they continued to rely on their brothers and sisters of the woods and waters and on each other for their survival. One day, Glooskap was sitting near a fire. Nugami was making clothing out of animal hides, and Nedawansum was in the woods getting food. Then a woman came to the fire and sat beside Glooskap. She put her arms around him and asked, "Are you cold, my son?" Glooskap was surprised, and he stood up and asked the woman who she was and where she had come from. She explained that she was his mother, and her name was Niganaptagewi. Glooskap continued to live with his family for a very long time. He gained spiritual strength by having respect for each member of the family. He listened to his grandmother's wisdom. He relied on his nephew's strength and spiritual power. His mother's love and understanding gave him dignity and respect. Glooskap's brothers and sisters of the wood and waters gave him the will and the food to survive. Glooskap learned that mutual respect of his family and the world around him was a key ingredient to basic survival. Glooskap's task was to pass this knowledge to his fellow Mi'kmaq people so that they too could survive in the Mi'kmaq world. This is why Glooskap became a central figure in Mi'kmaq storytelling. These are just but a few of the many legends surrounding Mi'kmaq mythology. If you are interested in learning more about their legends and history, I will be including references with the archives after the show. Teachings of the Mi'kmaq, we learn the value of family, respect, a valuable connection with nature, and the presence of the mystical ancient practices of shamanism, with an incentive to pass on knowledge. As far back as the early people the world over, we find myths and legends used to explain the world around us and our perspectives of the divine. This includes smaller regions of the world, such as right here in my home province of Nova Scotia. I will leave you with one last thought. Just like many other ancient civilizations, too, had a recount of the flood myth. I urge you to check it out. I really hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I look forward to your comments, suggestions, and ideas. And we are going to finish off tonight with one last song by Castalia Alexandrian called "The Wheel in Its Turning." Until next time, folks, may you blessed be. Thank you.
see. Embrace is a silent maid, the lance or the cauldron blades. Reborn. The day of the longest night, the stars, the universe born. She returns, the lady of lights, the virgin with babe in arms, newborn younglings nurse, the seedlings stir as winter snows melt, and the earth now dark. She arms him and names him Light, and vows him for pride some esteem when the sun attains its height. The bees gather nectar and dew from the blossoming flowers of the day. She summons him to her anew to make love to her while he may. The sun rises unto its height, and Our Lady and Lord are wed, for the spirits thirst into the cauldron, and it flows both white and red. Ooh. First fruits are reaped in the field, and the sickle flies over the corn. Rain, we're born. Strength is failing, fading. He becomes the Lord of Night, and she shares with him the changes. Robed in black, face corpse white. She follows him down to darkness, to where the shadows dwell, embracing the Lord of the Hidden Seed and making heaven of hell. Within the womb of night, the Lord of the Hidden Seed embraces the silent maid, or the cauldron bleeds. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Within the womb of night.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.